right, so I start the podcast. I get the sound setting is wrong, and then I start coughing. Fantastic. We are off to a beautiful, beautiful start on this lovely Wuhan day here in this Wuhan paradise. Great one. Are you going to talk about the Wuhan virus and the inflated death statistics? I love how suddenly people are discovering that, well, wait, look, they're inflating the death statistics. Really?
You can scream and shout with all your might.
Are you people dumb? Of course they're inflating the fucking statistics.
Dig in your heels and hold on tight.
I have explained this to you people. Just because someone dies,
either you are wrong or I am right,
and they have the Wuhan virus in their body, that doesn't mean they died from the fucking virus. But yes, those are still being counted as people who have been killed by the virus. Well, yes, that's how it works. Yes, they're inflating the numbers. Yes, this is Stating the Obvious Podcast, the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect, homes in on it, destroys motherfucking status. All around the world, does not matter what kind of statist you are. You could be a right-wing statist, a left-wing statist, a cyber statist, a femi statist, a commie statist, a Wuhan statist. You can be a techno statist. You could be a fucking nerd statist. You can be a fat statist, a skinny statist. You can be a fucking atheist statist and shove bananas up your ass. You can be a fucking tranny statist. Does not matter what kind of statist you are. The Great One is here to bitch slap the fuck out of you, okay? People, okay, alcohol-related automobile accidents. I am not making this up. You can do this thing called research by typing stuff into Google or DuckDuckGo, or if you're a boomer, you can use Bing. Let's say that a person is driving a car down the road, and there's a person crossing the street, and there's a passenger in the car who is drunk. The driver, totally sober. The person crossing the street, totally sober. The person riding in the car, let's say the person is passed out in the back seat. That's how drunk they are. They're unconscious. If the driver hits the pedestrian, that, statistically speaking, is an alcohol-related automobile accident. If anybody involved in an automobile accident is intoxicated, it is put down as alcohol related. Doesn't matter if it's the driver or passenger. That's how they inflate the statistics. This is the same fucking thing. Okay? Somebody dies, they test the whatever, they got Wuhan virus in them. That doesn't mean the fucking Wuhan virus killed them. Are these people fat? Are they unhealthy? Are they overweight? Do they have diabetes? Do they have pneumonia? Do they have cancer? Right, whatever. It's like you have cancer in your car wreck, and you die in the car wreck, but you had cancer. Well, wow, cancer killed him. Yes, 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 yes. For those of you in the cheap seats, yes. The numbers of people dying from Wuhan virus are inflated. Because every right now, this is what pays money, right? If people in your state die of Wuhan virus, well, you get money. Your state gets money. Your city gets money. Your county gets money. They're going to inflate the fucking numbers because everybody wants to be a fucking Wuhan disaster area so they can get money. Money printer goes brrr. Okay, the money printer is running overtime in Washington, D.C. right now. Everybody wants, oh my God, shit, I think I have Wuhan. I need some money. Everybody's fucking got Wuhan. Everybody's dying of Wuhan. Every fucking city in the United States is trying to figure out how they can posture themselves as a fucking Wuhan outbreak center so that they can get money. Yes, the numbers of Wuhan-related deaths have been exaggerated. Good morning. I am the great one himself, the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. Got my cup of coffee here in my Alice in Wonderland coffee mug given to me by a cute redhead. It is not morning right now. It's actually noon 30. But it'll be morning when you hear this because I'll get this posted ahead of time and it'll come out early in the morning. And if you wake up out of bed early in the morning and rush to your computer and rush over to the website to download this episode, well, then you will be hearing it early in the morning. I was trying to think of a good segue. I don't have one. Some odd weeks ago, walking around in downtown Fort Collins and taking note of all the businesses going out of business and other things. And other things as in things going out of businesses that aren't really businesses. And what with the Wuhan hoax, we're going to see how that intensifies, magnifies, stretches, prolongs, whatever the amount of economic crashing in the realm of the small business area. So there is a, was a local hippie artist commune type thing that was called the Downtown Artery. And they had a coffee shop, of course, because you got to have everything's got to have a coffee shop. And they had a performance space with a stage where they'd have bands perform, and they'd have, like, what do you call those drag shows where all the homos would come out and all the trannies would come out and act like freaks. And then they had a section that was, and I'm a little bit unclear if it was only studios or if people actually lived there. But they had the commune part where all the artists came together and lived in there or worked in there or whatever the hell they did in there. I walked through it once. I saw that there was a kitchen. I don't really know if it's a living space or a working space. But regardless, here's the point. Is there a point to this great one? You sound like you're... I am babbling a little bit. I'm getting warmed up here. Okay? I've been staring at a computer all morning. Been working on some website shit. I was migrating a website from one place to another and having to deal with htaccess configuration and just trying to beat it into submission, and it wouldn't work, and I kept thinking, I figured it out. Nope, that's not it. And I finally figured it out because I just forgot to add in one little important part that made all the fucking difference. But then I got that, and everything's fine. Everything's great. Everything's coming up, sunshine. All the more sunshine that the Downtown Artery went out of business. And now if I happen to be in that particular street corner, I'm less likely to see hippies. But the whole artist commune thing, and as a photographer, I've had people attempt to drag me into these things before. Oh, we're going to have this shared photography space, right? And everybody will pay a certain amount of money each month, and we'll have a shared studio and shared equipment. And we all know how well shared equipment gets taken care of, right? Because people really maintain shared equipment. You ever had a shared automobile? Did anyone ever put gas in that fucker? If you have roommates, do you share the tasks such as washing the dishes and dusting and vacuuming? Or do you delegate it to specific people by some kind of rotational system? Because we all know, well, those of us who aren't stupid, we all know that sharing doesn't work. People saying to me, ah, great one, it's going to be great. We'll have this photographers collective and blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, go away, guys. And these things always fail. I have seen so many attempts. By so many, I mean, like, realistically, probably about seven in the, God, how many years have I lived here and been doing photography since like 15 years or something? Whatever the fuck it is, a long time. I've seen about seven of them that I can think of offhand. By about, I mean seven that I can remember offhand fail. And so there's the downtown artery, this hippie collective of artists making terrible art. And these things always fail, because here's the problem. A artist collective, whether it's photographers or whatever all these people claim to have been, I have no idea, because I never went in there. I didn't want to see any of their art. I would see the people walking in and out of this place. I could see the kind of person that would go there. I went in the coffee shop a couple of times to scope it out. I could see the people in the coffee shop. Not the kind of people I wanted to associate with, and I certainly didn't want to see their art because it couldn't possibly have been good. The problem with bringing together a bunch of so-called artists is that none of these people have any money. Right? I mean, if they were making money off of their art, or even off of something else, then I'm not sure what would entice them into a collective. Other than, all right, maybe they're there because they want companionship, because they can't get a dog or something, right? Or they want, you know, maybe it's community. You know, oh, it's an artist community. Well, we all know how the great one feels about, once again, I don't want to be in a community with any of you people, because you ain't got no money, which means you're poor. And since a person will be like the five people they spend the most amount of time with, I don't want to spend too much time around poor people, or people who don't bathe, or people who have man buns, or people with tattoos and piercings. So you got all these art hippies, and you bring them together into the art hippie collective, and none of them have any money, right? So you got 20 art hippies, and they don't have any money. But, oh, we'll come together as a collective, and we'll do. But here's the problem. 20 people with zero money individually, you bring them together into a hippie community of art collectiveness, you still got zero money. Only now you got a collective, so now you got to pay bills. You got to pay for that electricity. You got to pay the rent. This place is in downtown Fort Collins. I don't know what they were paying for it, but it had to have been expensive. Had to be massively expensive just because of the location. And in the failure of the hippie artist collective, where you bring together 20 people, none of whom have any money, and you discover that upon bringing together these 20 people, you still have no money because it doesn't change, we see a reflection of why democracy doesn't work. Because there's this argument out there, and there's a book about this. I read this book a long time ago. I can't for the life of me remember the name of the book, so I can tell you about it. But I remember it was something about the wisdom of crowds, was the general, I want to say the word motif, the paradigm, the gist of the book was that there is wisdom in crowds, right? And so when you get people together and collectively make decisions, you're going to get better decisions, according to the book. Once again, we know this isn't true because we live in a democracy where you're allowed to vote having simply performed the task of metabolizing oxygen into carbon dioxide for 18 years. One thing I do vividly remember from the book was an example they gave where if you took a jar full of jelly beans or whatever, it could be, I don't know, aborted fetuses. It could be the big toes of your enemies, whatever. You got a jar full of jelly beans. And if one person guesses how many jelly beans are in there, well, it's probably not going to be very accurate. But the more people you get to give forth a guess, an estimate, on how many jelly beans are in the jar, you get 1,000 people to respond, and then you take their answers and you average them, and the answer you get will be fairly close. Now, that might be true, but that has nothing to do with democracy. Because here's some other things we know for a fact. Little social experiments have been done where the person who is the subject of the experiment, they don't know they're the subject. So they go into the room and there's 5 other people in the room. And one of the people is the person who is ostensibly conducting the experiment. You got 4 other people. Those 4 people, your subject thinks that those are 4 other subjects. But those 4 other people are actually actors participating in the experiment. And then the experimenter will hold up whatever, a piece of paper, and it's got 2 lines on it, or it's got a dot on it, or whatever. And the guy says, okay, are these 2 lines the same length? And the lines are obviously not the same length. But the 4 people who are actors will say, yes, the lines are the same length. Or he'll hold up a dot, and the dot will be red. And he'll say, is this dot red or is it blue? And the 4 actors will all say, well, it's blue, even though it's very obviously red. And so the person who is the actual subject of the experiment, more often than not, will go along with the crowd because they are afraid of standing out and of being different and of being wrong. The other thing to keep in mind with democracy is that there's no wisdom of the... So first of all, the wisdom of the crowd, well, not if you have a mob. Not if you have a crowd going in one direction. Because the wisdom very quickly gets trampled. See, it's one thing to ask somebody, how many jelly beans do you think are in this jar? And they just write it down on a piece of paper. And nobody else is critiquing their answer. But as soon as some other people are critiquing your answers, or as soon as some other people have given their answers and your answer is different from theirs, but you're afraid of the consequences of not giving the same answer, right? Whether that you just doubt yourself because, well, shit, maybe those lines really are the same length and I don't realize it or something, or because you're scared of not fitting in because you're a sissy, or maybe you're concerned about being destroyed by the job lynch mob because you're not a fucking liberal who believes in diversity, tolerance, and multiculturalism. Maybe you actually think white people should be allowed to live and even have their own country. Right? So you just shut up and you go along with it because for whatever reason. So the wisdom of the crowds doesn't apply there. The other problem with the wisdom of the crowds in democracy is that when you're guessing the number of jelly beans in a jar, you're looking at the jar of jelly beans, and you're coming up with a number. And the number can be whatever number you happen to think it might be. Right? Shouldn't say no one is saying this. Example, if you just put the jelly beans in the jar, you show it to somebody, how many jelly beans do you think in this jar? Well, shit, they could be wildly wrong one way or the other, or whatever. It's not the same as putting the jelly beans in a jar and saying to somebody, okay, there's somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 jelly beans in the jar. How many do you think are in the jar? Because now you see their range of guessing has been restricted. So in the experiment quoted in this book, where people are just guessing how many jelly beans are in the jar, there's no restriction. You don't have this in democracy. In democracy, you have a very strict restriction, right? Presidential election, pretty much most any election for that matter. You have two people. Now, you have more candidates than just the Republican and the Democrat. But again, a lot of people don't want to vote for a candidate who isn't a Republican or a Democrat, because that goes back to the first experiment where people are scared of being different from everyone else, right? Well, I mean, I kind of like whatever the Green Party or the Constitution Party or the Guns Party or the Environmentalist Party or, you know, whatever. But everyone else is either voting Republican or Democrat, and I'm really afraid to not do what everybody else is doing. I mean, if everybody else is doing it, there must be a good reason for it. I really probably should do what everybody else is doing. So any potential wisdom the crowd possesses very quickly gets buried under the need to seek approval. With approval of the rest of the crowd and conformity with the rest of the crowd. And so in democracy, you essentially have two choices, Republican or Democrat. Which is nowhere near the same as the wisdom of the crowd, which manifests itself in guessing the number of jelly beans in a jar. And using the jelly bean in a jar example in a book in order to try to explain why the wisdom of the crowds is such a great thing and why democracy is such a great thing, I understand why you're using that as an example. The problem is it doesn't work because those are two completely different scenarios. The wisdom of the crowd is stripped out because of the desire of the individual to conform and the restriction of potential choices. And thus, just as we arrive at a situation where you bring together 20 hippies who have $0, and in the end, you still have $0, right? The idea that you can get 400 million people who are individually pretty fucking stupid, but you allow them to vote, and somehow or another you're supposed to get a good decision out of the voting process because of the wisdom of the masses. No, allowing 400,000 stupid people to vote still gives you stupid results, okay? It's like 20 broke hippies with $0, so 20 times 0 equals 0. So you got 400,000 stupid people. Okay, but 400,000 times stupid is still stupid. Just as you can't magnify 0 by having 0 a whole bunch of times, no matter what you multiply 0 by, you're still getting 0. And no matter what you multiply stupid by, you're still going to get stupid. I got to write that down. No matter what you get stupid. That might be the title of this episode. I like that. God, I'm a genius. I'm not even warmed up yet. This is me fucking kind of putzing along at fucking half speed. Shit. Once I get turned on, did I forget a water? Did I not bring a water bottle? God damn it. After 15 years of doing this, you'd think I'd have my shit together by now. It also might rain today, so the forecast says. And of course, the forecast is never wrong. Then tomorrow, if we believe the forecasting, it's going to snow again. We had 2 days of snow, not a lot. It didn't stick around very long because everything was nice and warm from like 5 days of 70-degree weather and sunshine. So the shit melted away like almost instantly. Speaking of things going out of business, this was before the Wuhan hoax showed up to see how many businesses that's going to take out of commission. Back at some notes here, because I saw this article in the local newspaper, the Coloradoan. It was somebody else's newspaper, so I couldn't swipe the article. It was a newspaper in a restaurant or a bar or something. But I jotted down some notes. So, we have a mall here in Fort Collins. It's called the Foothills Fashion Mall. And a number of years ago, it was renovated and the area around it, the parking lot, part of the parking lot was turned into like strip mall type things out there. So there was all this construction and renovation and money dumped into this area. Because, of course, there are some people who think that they can predict the economy and, you know, with like, oh, we're going to renovate. This part of Fort Collins is called Midtown. And so there's all these, but we're going to renovate Midtown and we're going to turn Midtown into a place where people go and yada yada because we're going to do all this stuff and people are going to flock to it. And you're guessing, right? You're just guessing, as we'll find out in a minute. You have no way of knowing that. You know, you have no way of knowing that renovating the fucking mall is going to get people to come to the mall any more than you have any way of knowing how many people are going to fucking die from Wuhan. Okay? You are guessing. And why people can't admit that they're guessing, when they're guessing and when it's obvious they're guessing, I don't know. I think it's ego. So the article was about Smashburger. So there's two Smashburgers here in Fort Collins, at least two that I know of. There's one over on the south side, and then there was one that moved into one of these new places, not in the mall, but one of the strip mall areas outside of the mall. So the Smashburger went out of business. I'm scanning my notes here. When the Smashburger went out of business, they went out of business because they couldn't pay their rent. Now remember, this is when Smashburger is open and making money, and they couldn't pay their rent. Right now, all the restaurants are closed. Or at least most of them are closed. Some of them are doing the takeout delivery, but quite a few of the restaurants have just completely shut down. So how are they making money to pay their rent? It would be interesting to see how all of this shakes out. Because if the government's going to come along and tell businesses you can't be open to make money to pay your rent, telling those businesses they still have to pay their rent. You know, and there you can make anarcho-capitalist arguments here, but I just want to remind you, we're not in ancapitalism, okay? This is happening in the context of a statist society. So if the government comes along and says to you, you can't open your business to make money, you have to close your business, we're forcing you to do it, well then, as much as I don't want to run around saying government shouldn't tell people what to do, okay, if you're going to tell these people they can't make money to pay their rents, you kind of need to tell the people they pay rent to that they're not going to get paid rent that month. And I realize that that's, you know, statism begatting more statism and fighting fire with fire and shit. But yes, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this ends up, how many restaurants go out of business. Because what are they going to do? Now, maybe perhaps some of the landlords and properties and stuff like that. Got an email from my insurance company. They're cutting insurance rates for the next month by 25%. Yes, I mean, I've seen some responses from the private sector. They're taking this into account and behaving in a civilized fashion. But I don't know the circumstance of every single person that owns a restaurant in Fort Collins, much less the world. You know, I'm not one of these people who can magically project how many people are going to come shopping at the fashion mall if we spend a bunch of money renovating the fashion mall. So I don't know where it's going to end up, but it'll be interesting to see where it ends up. But looking back at Smashburger here, so when the guy who owned that branch of that franchise of Smashburger decided to close that thing down, he owed $130,000 in back rent. $130,000 in back rent. Now, I don't know how many months this was for, although, give me a second here. Well, actually, I see how we can make an even easier guess. Just saying, if I had $130,000, I could live on that for so long. Holy crap, I could stretch that, man. Anyway, now this was after he said his rent, his landlord, obviously the landlord was working with him to an extent, because the property management company allowed him to accumulate $130,000 worth of back rent. But this was after, he said in there, his rent was lowered, and I don't know what it was lowered from. It was lowered to $11,000 a month. $11,000 a month for rent for a fucking fast food joint. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I don't recognize the true value of commercial property or some horse shit like that. But I am completely incapable of comprehending how a building the size of the building that this Smashburger was in could possibly be worth $11,000 a month. Now he said in here, so anyway, I mean, so if it was lowered to 11K, let's say that before that it was 13K. So if he owes $130,000, that would mean he has 10 months worth of back rent if his rent was previously 13K a month. He said in the article that his Smashburger franchise was pulling in. I haven't had to think about this in a long time. This is not net. This is like what he made before he paid all the bills. Okay? He said he was pulling in $75,000 a month, but could never make a profit. Now think about this for a second. those of you who are statist and also capitalist at the same time, those of you who want people to start businesses and make money and drive the economy, walk through this with me for a moment. The guy's making $75,000 a month, but couldn't make a profit. Hold on, let's do some napkin calculations here. All right, let's say you need, you have like 8 people working there. Times, let's say you're open 16 hours a day. Is that reasonable? 16. 8 people, 16 hours a day. All right. $128 times 30 hours in a month. So that's 3,840 hours that you have to pay people for. Let's say you're paying them 15 bucks an hour. That is, holy fuck. Whoo! All right. See, this is why we're doing math. That's 57, let's just round up. That's 58,000 a month. That leaves him $17,000 to pay rent and to pay himself. And we haven't even talked about buying the stuff that he sells, dealing with, you know, whatever breakage, replacement, and of course, paying taxes. Hey, it's April 15th. Happy tax day. I heard it got pushed back. I don't give a shit. I sent my stuff in already. Because I'm whatever, if it's delayed, it's delayed. That's great. But I'm not going to fuck around with that. My God. $75,000 a month and he can't make a profit. Like, where's that money going? Well, we just did the math. It's going to the fucking employees, a lot of it. And of course, now again, I was highballing at $15 an hour because we're fighting for $15. But still, I mean, fuck. So right now, there's all these restaurants. None of them are making $75,000 a month. Oh, here it is. It was 5 years ago. Now, this article, I read this article like 6 months ago or something. So let's say 5.5 years ago. That's when the renovation at the mall happened. The renovation cost $313 million. $313 million. And at the time of this article, when this was written, when I wrote all this down, the mall and the surrounding shops were 70% leased. So there's 30% vacancy. 5 years after the $313 million renovation. Oh, sorry, and I got something wrong. The guy did not, he was evicted from his space. He did not willingly give it up. He was evicted. The Smashburger franchise was evicted. They did not willingly walk away. Which, again, I mean, you know, I don't want to, I'm trying to be as fair as I can here. I mean, they did allow the guy to rack up $130,000 worth of back rent. So they must have been trying to work with him to some extent. But just the numbers on this are boggling to me. The $313 million renovation with the fucking 30% vacancy rate. And the other thing they wrote in here that I thought was interesting is that, so here's our projections, right? Here's our Wuhan virus projection. Everything comes back to Wuhan. right? We keep hearing about how many billions of people are going to die from the Wuhan. I haven't looked at the stats today. I've been busy working on shit. I glanced at Twitter for a couple of minutes. That was about it. Oh, by the way, so the ninth person in Larimer County has died of Wuhan virus. And finally, a man, the first man in Larimer County has died of Wuhan virus. Eight women and one man. I'll take those odds. If we can kill, I will sacrifice men if for every man that dies from Wuhan, we can take out eight women. Those are reasonable odds as far as I'm concerned. That is a ratio I'm willing to work with. It's a fair trade. So the experts, you know, the same experts who are telling us about how many people Wuhan is going to kill and who we're supposed to listen to, the experts, back before the $313 million renovation of the Foothills Fashion Mall, said that the renovation and the subsequent economic activity was expected to generate $9 million a year in sales tax. So that was their projection. 9 million deaths from Wuhan. I mean, sorry, $9 million a year in sales tax. Right? So, of course, they were projecting how much economic activity, how many people would come there and spend money. A projection of the future that nobody can possibly make with the slightest amount of accuracy. And how accurate were they? Well, last year, the sales tax generated was $3.3 million. Not $9 million, $3.3. So the experts who are telling us how many people are going to die of Wuhan virus overestimated that. Just a little. I don't know. They tripled it. Their estimate was triple reality. Experts. They're not experts, guys. There's no experts. That's why I got to remember to put this in the other people's podcast thing, which I think I am going to do. The fucking episode 199 of The Dick Show, where Sean is just going, I'm just embarrassing himself, going on about how we got to believe the experts. The experts have said, and they're experts. I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude. This expert worship. Then, of course, if you find an expert who questions all of this stuff, well, that person has a political agenda, right? It's just like global warming. All the experts all agree on global. Well, no, actually, there's a whole lot of people who don't agree. Well, but they have a political agenda. Oh. So all these other experts who agree with each other because, you know, none of them wants to be the person who looks stupid by saying, well, no, those two lines actually aren't the same length. One line is clearly longer than the other line. Well, but the other four people in the room say they're the same length. Well, okay, but those people are wrong. Right? The experts, with their political agendas and their need to continue to get government funding and their desire to fit in with everyone around them, well, those experts all agree. Well, of course they do. Of course they do. And that's why those experts, they can project, they can predict when the polar ice caps are going to melt, 2000, 2010, 2014. You know, they can predict, Paul Ehrlich, when we're going to run out of food and everybody's going to starve to death, 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, 2020. They can predict with great accuracy how many people are going to die of the Wuhan virus. Let me tell you what, guys, the great one, the great one, I am. I am an expert. And I am now going to predict with expert accuracy how many people are going to die of the Wuhan virus. Now you're saying to yourself, you're saying, oh, great one, I think you're full of shit. We don't think you can do this, great one. We don't think you have the expertise to accurately predict the number of people who will die from the Wuhan virus. Oh, the great one, he says unto you, motherfuckers and bitches and bitchettes, listen the fuck up. Because I can do this. I have the ability. I can see into the future. I can hear what the people think. I see rows and rows of bleeding hands reaching out to me. You guys don't know that song, but you should, because it's a fucking awesome album. So you're saying, great one, are you going to kill the suspense? Are you going to tell us how many people are going to die from Wuhan? Wuhan. Wuhan. Okay, are you ready for the wisdom? Are you ready for the knowledge? Can you handle the knowledge? Can you handle knowing? This is not a guess, guys. This is a fact. I'm about to tell you a fact. You can take this shit to the bank. So be the only thing in the bank that's worth money, because the money ain't worth anything, because the money printer goes brrrr. Okay? Here we are. How many people are going to die from the Wuhan virus? Are you ready for the truth? Are you ready to know? Here it is. Not enough. That's how many are going to die. Not enough. All right, we do not have time to do that thing that I was going to do right there. So let's jump over here. Let's do something else. Oh, can I do this? No, let's not do that. We don't have time for that. We got time for this. This is from... We're going back to the olden days. We're not going to Wuhan the fuck it. Actually, I just didn't Wuhan the fuck it everything. Houston Chronicle, Friday, June the 14th, 2019. Back in the good old days before the Wuhan virus. See, this couldn't happen now. What I'm about to read you, this is no longer permitted in the Wuhan states of America. A sweet success. Law protects kids selling lemonade. Ah, you statists are in, you know, believe in capitalism. You guys are so fucking wonderful. You're so awesome. Kids in Texas can now run their own lemonade stands with no fear of trouble with the law, just in time for the summer. On Monday, Governor Greg Abbott, this is what the governor of the state of Texas is concerned with, right? These are the sort of problems that the government is dealing with. This is what the government said. Well, why wasn't the government prepared for a pandemic? Well, maybe because the government spends its time on stuff like this. On Monday, Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill that blocks cities and neighborhood associations from adopting or enforcing rules that prohibit children from occasionally selling lemonade or other non-alcoholic beverages on private property. Oh my God, so much freedom. So much freedom. In Texas, the governor has signed a bill allowing children to occasionally sell non-alcoholic beverages on private property. Oh my God, the freedom. There's so much freedom. I'm sure the founding fathers could not possibly have envisioned a society in which there was this much freedom. Remember, guys, you're not a slave. Oh no, you're so fucking free. You have so much freedom. The bill, authored by State Representative Matt Krause, Republican from Fort Worth, gained traction after police in East Texas shut down a sibling-run lemonade stand in 2015 because the girls lacked a $150 peddler's permit from the city of Overton. Because it was a really slow crime day. The police had nothing to do other than harass two little girls selling lemonade in their parents' front lawn. Now, as far as I'm concerned, once in NCAPA dice, this would be solved because the parents would come out and shoot the fucking cops for trespassing. Except, of course, in NCAPA dice, there'd be no such thing as cops. But, I mean, that is the answer right there. Those police officers should have been shot dead for trespassing. Krauser's House Bill 234 passed unanimously. Oh, bruv. Oh, good for you. Good for you. Passed unanimously in both chambers and was signed by Abbott in a video he posted on Twitter on Monday night. Quote, "Here is a common sense law," Abbott said in the video before picking up a glass of lemonade. Quote, "We had to pass it because the police shut down a lemonade stand here in Texas. So kids, cheers." Unquote. And now, of course, the police are, if you were to dare to open a lemonade stand, the police would shut it down. I don't know. Have you been on the internet? Have you seen any of the articles about people turning in their neighbors, about police arresting people for going outside, about your cell phone being used to track you? So anyway, I'll be writing about all of that in an upcoming edition of Linkage, intending to do, if I can talk correctly, another weekend Wuhan update. I already got way more material than I'll probably even have time to get in. And there is some absolute 1984 police state shit in there that I'll be talking about. And that's not an opinion. I don't have opinions. I have facts. I don't have to bother with the other side. Not enough people will die from Wuhan.